Stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in just a minute here with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, taking a look at the agenda for tomorrow's County Council meeting. Later on, Park City Council Member Steve Joyce and Project Manager Jonathan Weidenhammer have details on how to apply for the $2.2 million in Park City CARES Act funding. Finally, Cheryl Fox, Director of Summit Land Conservancy, has an update on open space issues. Well, it is Election Day, and as we have reported, the Summit County Clerk's Office is under quarantine through at least Friday. Meanwhile, the Summit County Council will continue to look at the budgets of some of the county's special services districts during their regular meeting tomorrow. On the phone with the preview, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with this. I mean, we received a press release yesterday morning saying that someone in the clerk's office had been exposed to COVID-19 and that they were now under quarantine and wouldn't be counting any ballots they received after Friday, October 30th. A lot of people are upset about this, Tom, saying that those in the clerk's office are essential workers and they need to be on the job, especially today. So whose decision is it to put them under quarantine?
Well, the same protocols that we follow for any employee or any exposure, contact, or confirmed case are the same for any employee, whether they're essential or not. Essential doesn't mean you come to work sick. Essential just means that, especially back when we were under stay-at-home orders, that some functions had to continue. The example given most often is the sheriff's office, where we still needed patrol, we still needed our corrections folks in the jail, those types of things. And at the time, also, the other example most often given is plow drivers. In this case, certainly conducting the election is essential, and nothing else has changed. Besides how we're counting. Ballots are still being collected at all of the ballot boxes. They are being gathered and secured at the courthouse each day. Today we have the drive-up voting location. Just drove by it this morning on my way into Colville, and it's operating, and people are voting this morning. So the only thing that has changed is that we're not able to count. We weren't able to count yesterday. We're not able to count today. And we're waiting to see what happens with the exposure we've had to see what the next step is.
So what you're telling me is that those in the clerk's office are not considered essential workers, because if in fact they were under the CDC guidelines, they would be on the job, because the do's and don'ts, according to the CDC, say that they go to work, we take their temperature, they wear a face mask, they practice social distancing, but they work as their duty calls.
Not exactly. And obviously there's a choice there. But the main thing that we have to balance is that these are people, and we don't want to unnecessarily expose them if we don't have to, because this exposure could cause complications, especially with those that are vulnerable, and we do have folks that are more vulnerable in this group of people.
So my guess is that they've all been tested. If those tests come back negative, would then they go back to counting before Friday?
We're going to follow the health department's guidance on this. The clerk is in close contact with them and has been at every step of the way in this, in his decision making. The balance, just as we all do in evaluating these cases, is between protecting the folks and completing the job. Again, the other thing that's happening in the county is that, because we're still under an emergency situation, we're rallying any way we can other resources in order to assist the clerk's office through this.
So will Clerk Kent Jones be giving a ballot report today, basically telling us what ballots have been counted up through Friday?
He has told me that there will be unofficial results reported today.
And that it's happening at 8 o'clock tonight?
I'll let him answer the specifics about timing and all that, because that's certainly his purview. My understanding is that tonight there will be unofficial results reported.
All right.
And that is in consultation with the Lieutenant Governor's office.
All right. So, again, we've got that drive-out voting location happening at the county fairgrounds in Colville until 8 o'clock tonight. Is that?
That's correct. It's open now. It opened at 7 a.m. And if you pull off I-80 at exit 162, I believe it is, going into Colville, you'll immediately see signs as you drive into Colville directing you to the polling station.
Okay. In the meantime, do not put your ballot in a postal box because it won't be counted. That needed to be postmarked by yesterday. But there are still ballot boxes throughout the county. People can drop those ballots off before 8 o'clock tonight.
Absolutely. Those ballot boxes will be open at 8 o'clock. They will be secured right after 8 o'clock. And they are at Colville City Hall, the Marsac Building in Park City, the Fresh Market at Jeremy Ranch, the Market in Park City, the Camas County Services Building, the Sheldon's Richens Building at Kimball Junction, and here in Colville also we have a ballot box in the courthouse.
Some of those offices, though, close at 5 o'clock, so people should probably have it in by 5 o'clock.
If they feel comfortable that, but we will have all of those locations available till 8 o'clock.
Ah, okay. All right. Anything else you want to say about the election?
It's, again, everything, all votes will be counted as the clerk has indicated. Kent Jones was out on I think, every news outlet yesterday. And the unofficial results will be posted this evening.
All right. So I guess if the clerk's office isn't the one picking these ballots up at these various ballot boxes, you have other people doing that?
It is a combination. It is folks certified by the clerk's office to do that.
Okay. Let's see. The council agenda, that starts at 2:15. The council will continue to look at a proposed special exception for a lot owner in Highland Estates wanting to increase the disturbance area. The council was unable to come to a decision a couple of weeks ago. Why not?
Well, I think simply at time on that agenda. They heard from the applicant or the appellant, and they heard from staff in that regard. They discussed it for a few minutes, but I think they felt like they needed more time to discuss that and go over some of the legal issues or code issues associated.
It looks like on tomorrow's agenda, the council will not be taking public input on this. How come?
They closed the public hearing at the last meeting. So that the item just comes back as a discussion and possible action item.
All right. The bulk of the agenda then, considering and approving tentative budgets for several special service districts, the Centerville Basin Special Recreation District, it looks like their budget down 3.2% from the original 2020 budget. Property tax revenue is up, but revenue from charges for services down nearly 13%. I'm guessing that's a COVID impact there?
Absolutely. I think a combination of, you know, less capacity at the field house, as well as probably some lessening of programs themselves from the rec perspective in the summer projects that revenue to be a little bit down for next year as well, because we're still going to be dealing with the effects of the pandemic well into next year.
And while that is a slight staff decrease, they're still planning to add a staff position for trails enforcement?
Yeah, that's a key position. You'll also recall that last year, leading into property tax collections for this year, the Snyderville Basin Rec District and the council went through Truth in Taxation to increase the mill levy for the district, which part of it was to allow for more enforcement around our trailheads.
All right. Mountain Regional Water District, the summary says that they are in stable financial position due to strong water sales, a declining but also adequate building economy, and some good cash reserves. So no rate increase here then?
That's what we're seeing, correct.
Yeah. It looks like they were not impacted much by COVID. And of course, with this summer's drought, water sales probably really good. Any concern about the drought and if water supplies will be recharged this winter?
Well, I mean, we're always concerned with drought, as you know, water is a key function within the county and especially for the service district. I think water is going to be a constant discussion in our community. Certainly, with more development, those water resources become more constrained every year.
And then the Park City Fire District, not much difference in their budget, about $40,000 less. How has the ambulance service been impacted by COVID?
We're going to get a report on that during this budget hearing. I think revenues in regards to the Park City area or the west side of the county for EMS are strong, meaning that collections per call are stronger than they have been, actually breaking even or a little better from the budgetary side of that. Still lagging behind on the east side of the county from the standpoint of collections per call.
Okay, and just also wanted to note that the fire board has apparently renewed the contract for Chief Paul Hewitt. Any idea what that contract is for? I mean, years?
I have not been briefed on that yet.
All right, and then finally, the North Summit Recreation District, they won the taxing authority on Election Day last year by a razor-thin margin. Now they're proposing a tax increase with a public hearing set for next Monday. And it looks like we're talking about just, what, $15 a year?
Well, obviously, it depends on the value of your home. It will generate between $80,000 and $100,000 of revenue for the district. The truth in taxation hearing that's happening and process is a step in the process to establish the mill levy. So we're going through that now, and then their first actual mill levy collection will be in 2021.
Okay. Any updates on Hideout?
I don't have any updates on Hideout at this point.
Okay. And any updates then with regard to the pandemic?
Just that we're experiencing, and you've heard this from Rich Bulla, we're experiencing quite a large surge through the state and in Summit County. I think we're going to be hearing more about that over the next 2 weeks, about how the state wants to react to that.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention, Tom?
That's all I've got today. I just encourage people to go and vote.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. The Summit County Clerk's Office, as we've been reporting, is under quarantine for the week, that due to a positive COVID-19 exposure. Even with Election Day today, the Clerk's Office is quarantined through Friday. The office has already processed 18,000 ballots. Of the 28,000 ballots they've received, it will not be releasing any of the vote counts until after the votes close tonight at 8 p.m. Speaking to KPCW yesterday, Summit County Clerk Kent Jones said that even if the office was there to count ballots this week, they would not have counted all 28,000 by Election Day.
The only thing that's going to be different is we're going to be shy a few, maybe 2,000 ballots to report on tomorrow night than what we would have if we would have processed today and tomorrow.
That's because they've been counting the ballots at a steady rate since they started coming in.
We've been getting a couple of thousand each day. So we were on track to, by tomorrow night, we would have had maybe 25,000, 24,000 at a total.
He says the office never makes an official call on election night, but counting the ballots after Election Day usually doesn't change the unofficial election results that are reported tonight.
So with probably 2/3 of the ballots already going to be released, unless there's something that's really, really close, that's the way it is every election is. Election night is unofficial results.
Even though some ballots won't be processed by tonight, Jones says that voters shouldn't be discouraged.
ballots that have already been returned have been processed, and the ones that are still coming in will be processed. They just won't be processed by tomorrow night.
Again, anyone who needs assistance with the replacement ballot or same-day registration can vote in person at the Summit County Fairgrounds. Again, that is open now through 8 p.m. today. The voting center is drive-through only. Votes cast in person will be processed when the clerk's office finishes quarantine. And again, another big reminder, if you have not mailed your ballot, do not mail it. You'll need to find one of the many drop-off boxes located throughout the county and make sure it's in one of those boxes by 8 p.m. tonight in order for it to count. Well, last week, Park City Municipal launched the $2.2 million CARES grant program. On the phone with details, I have Park City Council Member Steve Joyce and Project Manager Jonathan Weidenhammer. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
And Jonathan, you have added the title as Project Manager for this. You're the city's Economic Development Manager. How come? And I, the only reason I ask is because the last time a project manager title was added, the staff member left, Nate Rockwood. We had given him the project manager of the Arts and Culture District when he was actually the budgets manager.
I just think it's semantics. I think it's just intended to have somebody who's in charge of the project. So I'm still the economic development manager. My title hasn't changed.
Okay. So where did this $2.2 million come from?
The city council has had a very strong relationship with the Utah League of Cities and Towns, and working with them, the mayor in particular was able to show the compelling financial impact that COVID has had on the resort-based communities. It's been very disproportionate. While the rest of the state is trending upward in the sales tax, the city is still projecting as much as 43% down year over year. And the League of Cities and Towns worked with the governor's office of management and budget to reallocate some unspent CARES money into this community.
So, Steve, why wasn't this money available when people needed it most last spring and early summer?
Well, part of that was just, you know, when was the federal money handed out and how is it handed out? I mean, we did get a little bit of money in some of the earlier tranches, but it was done equitably by population. And as you know, our population doesn't really reflect what our real day-to-day impacts are. So we did have some money, but most of that, I mean, you saw where we were doling out PPP to businesses and nonprofits trying to, you know, we were cooperating with the county to do that. So some of the money did come out, but not in this kind of form with big grants.
So who is this money for, Steve?
Two things. One is the businesses here within Park City, and I want to be careful with that because that's meaning, you know, 84060 Park City, not the Park City mailing address. But for nonprofits, it's both the nonprofits in 84060 and 84098, as long as they serve the people in Park City proper. So we're kind of seeing a split between the businesses and nonprofits, and we have no idea what we'll end up with for, you know, the number of applications between the two. But right now it's definitely dominated by the businesses.
Okay. So this is only helping people within the business districts in Park City proper, not those small businesses at Kimball Junction.
Correct.
Okay. And Jonathan, why don't you tell us how they apply for it?
The easiest way to apply is to go through www.parkcity.org/cares. The grant is being administered by the Mountain Lands Association of Government staff, but you can get to the application through either the city's website or Mountain Lands, which is mountainland.org. And there's two links, one for a for-profit business and one for a not-for-profit business. And it's an application of about, 20 or 25 questions. I think it takes a little bit of time to get through, but if you have your information ready and available, and most people have applied for other grants, it shouldn't be too difficult.
Yeah. How many applications have we received? Do you know?
We got an update yesterday. We have 41 completed applications requesting $1.8 million so far. I would put the call out, though, that only two not-for-profits have applied so far. We do understand with LivePC, GivePC, that those people are probably busy, and we'd expect them to probably hit it pretty hard this weekend and next week.
All right. And why such a short window? I mean, applications opened a week ago, and they'll close on Monday, November 9th.
Well, we got notice of this program, I'd say, about 2.5 weeks ago, and there's a requirement that any grant spending is to help with expenses or losses between March 1st and November 30th. People have to be able to demonstrate that they've spent the money by November 30th, likely that they'll be looking at past expenses or past losses to payroll or whatever to be spending. And so we needed a few weeks, about 2.5, to administer the program and have people have an application form. And we really just wanted to get it out into the hands of people as soon as we could. So even with the November 9th closing of the applications, the money isn't going to hit people's hands until about November 20th.
All right. And then, again, you say it has to be spent by November 30th? I mean, you can just pay off a credit card, I guess, huh?
Right. I mean, most people will be able to document losses and damages looking back all the way back to March 1st, or any improvements that they have been making to get ready for winter, whether it's, separation in business places or past payroll or, things like that. PPE are all eligible. And so we do believe that there's a pretty good opportunity to look back and document the past damages as opposed to thinking what you can spend between November 20th and November 30th.
Yeah. And you mentioned the 25 questions on the application. What is it that they're looking for there?
It's really, it's documenting losses. It's telling us how you'll spend the money. It's asserting that you won't duplicate benefits, meaning if you've already received CARES money, that you have new or incremental things that you're looking to offset. We're also going to be asking you to tell us how you're going to forward the City Council critical goals and priorities, which are listed and linked in the application form. And then just some nuts and bolts about the business. Where is it located? What do you do? How have you been hurt? How many employees do you have? Just simple stuff.
Yeah. And Steve, who decides who gets what?
Well, there's a scoring sheet that you could find out on that ParkCity.org CARES page that kind of talks about how we're going to rank things. But it's going to come down to a combination of Jess over at MAG is going to be doing kind of the first cut of the rankings on some of the things like, how many employees you have, how much money you're asking for, that kind of thing. She's kind of going through the are you valid. And then between Nan Worrell and myself and a couple of members of the Park City staff, we'll go through and make the actual recommendations for the grants.
And it's the City Council who will ultimately decide on who gets what?
This one was done the normal way we do things like special services contracts and any kind of grants and stuff. We have enough time to where we can bring a proposal forward, get it into a public meeting, have City Council vote on it. And this is happening literally so quickly that council voted at our last meeting to basically just put it in the hands of Nan and I for the final decision. So we won't actually go back for a council vote. We'll be keeping them informed, obviously, but this won't, the first time it really goes to council with the end results, it'll be a done deal.
Oh, wow. How much money can people ask for?
We're looking for people to, in general, we've said we're probably not going to hand out more than $50,000 to any one applicant, but we have gotten some applications that are higher than that. And so we encourage people, it's like if you have expenses, if you have impacts, document them and request them. And you may not get it all, but, don't be hesitant about being, kind of forthright about what the COVID impacts are for you and your either business or your nonprofit.
Yeah, it sounds like the money can be used for basically anything. Jonathan, is there anything that the money cannot be used for?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously things. The federal requirements of use of CARES money is pretty explicit on what it can and can't be used for. It's really for damages stemming from COVID, and I think people can be fairly creative with that. And it's for things for social distancing, employee and customer safety, PPE, conducting business operations remotely, sanitation supplies, if you're buying or building a tent for the winter, tents, outdoor heaters, and other expenses that are business related that wouldn't have been necessary if it hadn't been for COVID. And so it's a pretty broad slate, but at the same time, you have to be able to document the money. You have to be able to prove that it was used for an eligible expense. And most importantly, you have to be able to document that it's not double dipping, that you haven't already used CARES money and you're not going to use it twice.
Okay. And can you explain who is included in this? Or maybe it's easier. Because what I read, it's we're talking about businesses and nonprofits with 60 or less full-time employees. I mean, that's just about everybody in town, except for perhaps the resorts, the municipality, and the school district, yeah?
Yeah, we had a good conversation about how big a small business was or wasn't. And again, we didn't want to leave any money kind of on the table. The state and the League of Cities and Towns were very accommodating to try to help us get this money. And honestly, I think we want to do anything we can to keep that money here. And we didn't feel like we should artificially restrict or prevent a medium-sized restaurant or one of our, you know, bigger companies in town from being eligible for the grant. And so we moved the number up to 60. We still feel that that defines what a small business is in town. And we're trying to get the money out into the community. Honestly, the big fear was that we wouldn't have enough subscription. We wouldn't have enough requests for the money. We wanted to make sure we cast a broad enough net to make a lot of people eligible.
Yeah. Any guesses as to what that ultimate number could be? I mean, if all, you know, small businesses and nonprofits?
Well, we've got 41 applications in for $1.8 million, and really only two not-for-profits have hit us so far. We would expect, I would think it wouldn't be a far cry to see $3 million or plus in grant applications. I think it's going to be a good problem to have if it's hard for Nan and Steve to figure out how to award that money. These are good problems.
Yeah. And Steve, explain a little bit better, if you would, this ranking system. It sounds like people, organizations would get more points if they're smaller, or how does that work?
Yeah, certainly. There's a fundamental baseline of things that you have to meet. You know, are you in the right location? Do you have are you a small enough business? That kind of thing. And then there's extra points that you can get for, did you get money from things like the PPP program or other CARES money? And if you are one of the businesses that didn't get any of the earlier money, then you can get some extra points. If you're a smaller business, you can get extra points. If you're minority-owned, woman-owned, vet-owned, then you can get some extra points. And then there's one that's really important to us, which is kind of how does your business and the things that you're asking for fit into our community priorities? And so that's really kind of a way to make it tied more tightly to, you know, Park City and what we're trying to do as a community versus just, you know, my business has been impacted. There's a lot of possibility for people to, you know, kind of score some extra points. But I think the biggest thing that we're going to end up looking at in the end is, you know, how much have you been impacted and what do you need and how would you use it?
Okay. Again, applications are due, I'm guessing, what, 5 p.m. Monday, November 9th. And then you hope to have a decision by when?
The applications are due the 9th, and the city will have our final scoring and recommendations by the 13th. We'll spend the Monday and Tuesday of next week making sure the applicants have all their technical details in, their business licenses, and looking to sign contracts with the MAG, you know, Wednesday. And we intend to award those checks at City Hall on Friday the 20th.
Okay. And then it has to be spent by the end of the month?
By the 30th, looking back all the way to March 1st, the city right now has a request into the state to extend that deadline to December 30th. We feel pretty confident we'll get that extension, which will automatically apply to everybody. But, you know, we're not going to hear about that probably until the last week of November. And so we're just encouraging people to be prepared to get that money spent by November 30th. It's just a safer approach.
Sure. Okay.
Are finding that a number of people have, with the applications we've received so far, it's really expenses that they've already had since March 1st. And so it's not as much about, you know, spend it as they already spent it. And now they're just looking for a way to recover it.
Yep. Okay. Anything else either of you'd like to mention?
Just encourage people. It's like the money's here. We really want to have the problem of too many applications and too much request and make sure we can put it into the right places. So Monday is a hard cutoff for applications. Next Monday, November 9th.
And Jonathan?
That's it.
Okay. Again, go to parkcity.org. You're not going to find it right on the homepage unless you click on the little red stripe that says parkcity.org/COVID-19. That'll bring you up then to the Park City Municipal Cares Grant Program. Steve Joyce, Jonathan Weidenhammer, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, as part of KPCW's ongoing coverage of early childhood care and education, we're highlighting the Children's Center of Salt Lake City for the work they do to address trauma in children under the age of 7. KPCW's Carolyn Murray talks with CEO Rebecca Dudson about the center and the crisis work they do with young children and families.
Children's Center CEO Rebecca Dudson has a team of 85 people, which consists of a large clinical team of psychologists, psychiatrists, and paraprofessionals. She says they provide wraparound, integrative, evidence-based care for children 7 and under who have had adverse childhood experiences.
And those really fall into, you know, a few main categories. You are looking at abuse or neglect, or dysfunction within the family or the child situation. So a child might be experiencing or witnessing physical abuse or sexual abuse or emotional abuse. They may be being neglected, not taken care of. They may be experiencing other things that are very traumatic. So separation from a caregiver due to a number of reasons, but some of them are everyday experiences that we have, like the death of a parent or a caregiver or a sibling.
The impacts of trauma vary depending on the child. Dudson says the Children's Center clinical team provides individualized care that helps a child become more resilient and able to build relationships and handle life challenges.
Children are measured in 4 basic areas. So initiative, self-regulation, attachment, and relationships. And then total protective factors. And so you can see that, you know, is a child making progress in their ability to handle their big emotions? What type of progress are they making? And, you know, a lot of our children who are experiencing significant difficulties have more difficulty functioning in what I would say would be a traditional child care setting or maybe even a preschool.
The center serves up to 1,800 children a year. They've been providing care along the Wasatch Front for 50 years. They receive referrals from many community sources, including pediatricians, caregivers, families, and word of mouth. Dudson says both the child and their caregiver are engaged and assessed to determine the appropriate service. Even if a child does not have insurance, the center is able to provide clinical care through generous community support. Some 200 participated in a virtual fundraiser last week.
We do not turn away any child or family who needs services where our services can help. And so it is private donations that step in to make up that difference.
Dudson says children who face emotional or mental conditions are also good candidates for the therapies they offer. They're launching a teleconsulting service for clinicians working in other early childhood programs throughout the state.
We're really unique in the type of skill and service that we provide. And we would like to be able to do more of that. And we're working to expand our training in a way that we can help other providers feel more comfortable and have the training that they need.
To learn more about the Children's Center of Salt Lake City and their new teleconsulting service, go to kpcw.org. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
KPCW News reports on issues affecting children aged 0 through 3 years old is brought to you by the Early Childhood Fund at the Park City Community Foundation. For more information, go to earlychildhoodalliance.net.
On the phone with us now with an update from the Summit Land Conservancy, Executive Director Cheryl Fox. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
So it sounds like you have wrapped up on one open space purchase in Peoa and still have more money to raise for another in Oakley?
That's right. That's where we are. We had a big push to raise $450,000 to preserve the Marchant Meadows on Wooden Shoe Lane in Peoa. And I'm happy to say that we were successful in raising that. And so we will be able to close on the property. Now, initially, we had hoped to close on October 30th. But we did not get a signature on a document from the NRCS that we need, and we're still waiting for that. So we are fortunate that the owners out there have given us an extension to get that signature. And again, it's a matter of just getting that last signature. And then we will take out a loan from Grand Valley Bank, and we will own the property. It'll be a little bit of a process, but we're really excited about this because, again, this is a different type of project for the Summit Land Conservancy. We will be owning this property instead of just holding a conservation easement on it, which means we will be responsible for irrigation ditches and fences and all of those kinds of things. But we feel like, you know, we're trying to figure out how to serve our community, and we're finding that in some places landowners aren't able or willing to sell just a conservation easement. So if we want to save land, we kind of have to step in and figure out other ways to do that. So Marchant Meadows is our foray into owning a open public preserve.
Yeah. You did something like this with Stevens Grove in Oakley, but you had a house that you could sell. Any talk about perhaps selling a lot from Marchant Meadows in order to kind of pay it back or at least recoup some of the annual operating expenses that you'll have on it?
We would rather not do that. We really hope that what we'll be able to do is recoup most of the cost of buying the property through the sale of a very restrictive conservation easement. So we will own the property, but the federal government will actually own the conservation easement. That easement is meant to protect wetlands and wildlife habitat. And so we'll have to balance other uses like public access and probably, I'm sure there will be managed grazing and those kinds of things. In terms of the ongoing expenses going forward, that is an interesting question. And we're working to, you know, set aside a little bit of money like we do every time we close on a transaction. Every time we close on a transaction, we have a perpetual responsibility. So this isn't a new idea for us. It's just the implementation of the idea will be a little bit different.
So what do you think you'll get from the federal government then for that easement out of the $450 that you paid for it?
So we're paying over $4 million for the property. In order to have enough money, you know, a down payment to go to closing, we had to raise $450,000 from the community. We also have received a grant from Summit County's Eastern Summit County Agricultural Preservation Committee for $250,000. So that's the cash that we need to have to take to closing. So we will own it with that money. The federal grant, we're hoping, will be around $3.5 million, but that won't come through for a year.
Okay. So that's why you go out and get the loan to just hold it for a year or so.
Exactly. It's a bridge loan.
Got it.
And we're happy. We're working with Grand Valley Bank on that. They've been a great partner for us.
All right. Also, you've got the Riverbend Park in Oakley. Tell us about this 5-acre parcel.
So this is a connecting piece that eventually we hope will be the stepping stone or a piece in the quilt that connects a trail that might run along the river all the way through Oakley. That's a vision that some people have, and we've been working for several years to make that possible. Our Stevens Grove that you mentioned earlier was a keystone in that. That parcel lies right in the middle of Oakley, right on the Weber River. And if that parcel had become a bunch of private homes, it would have been really difficult to see this vision of a riverside trail meandering through Oakley. Marchant Meadows is also a cornerstone piece of this because that's where the river meets Wooden Shoe Lane. So Riverbend Park is another piece in this puzzle. It's not very big. It's been a long a two-part process. Again, Summit County helped out with some TRT money through a grant that they made to the city of Oakley. This will be a situation where the city of Oakley will actually own this property. And basically, we bought a conservation easement from the landowner, and now we're buying the land, and that's why it's a two-part transaction. And we just need the last $20,000. We had applied for a state grant for hoping that they would put the money in for the acquisition of this park, and we didn't get it. So we had to turn to the community and see if they would help us fund this little connecting piece. We're really grateful to Josh Kelly, who did a benefit for us earlier in October outside at the Oakley campground. It was this beautiful evening, and he and his talent was so effervescent. It was really a magical evening, and it brought us a lot closer.
Okay. But again, still money short. You're hoping to get that then for on Friday? I mean, is that what your goal is there, to raise it?
Live PC, Give PC is unrestricted funding for us, so we can use it wherever it's most needed. People are welcome to make gifts. That you can go on our website at wesaveland.org, and there's a tab you can click on for Riverbend Park and make a donation there that will go directly to Riverbend Park. You know, we have until the end of the month to raise this last money, and I think that, if people feel strongly about it, we would love to have them contribute.
All right, and then you're also busy in Wasatch County. You've got another donation there. Tell me about that.
We do. In 2018, we were given a conservation easement on the Provo River, right on the border between Wasatch and Summit counties. And that's about a 125-acre easement donation. And the purpose of that easement was to enhance the river quality, water quality, wildlife habitat, specifically the trout habitat. And the owners there realized that the property across the river in Wasatch County had been slated for development and looked like that was going to start to happen. So they have made the decision to go ahead and purchase another 87 acres and add that to the preserve that they already had. So that is coming down the pike in our direction before the end of this year. So we're excited about that, because that has been both sides of the river are protected.
Yeah, so I don't understand that a conservation easement was given to you. You usually purchase those?
We do often purchase them, but they can be donated, and this is not the first time that's happened. Others have done that. Rocky Point was an easement donation. So people can donate easements on property that they own. There still needs to be conservation values on the property, and those conservation values need to be something that can, you know, still be there in 50 and 100 and 200 years. So sometimes people will call me up and say, hey, you know, I have a house and I'm kind of out in the wildlands and I bought the lot next to me and I'd like to put a conservation easement on the lot next to me. That usually does not work, because eventually, you know, all the other lots get filled in and the open space right next to somebody's house doesn't have conservation values anymore. And the IRS also doesn't really like it if you just put conservation easements on your backyard. But there are situations, a number of situations in Summit County, where people actually have put conservation easements. They just donate them. Sometimes they have public access. Ari Ioannidis did this on a property that he owns, 235 acres. So it definitely is another tool. There are some land trusts in other parts of the country who have never purchased a conservation easement. All of them have been donated to them.
Okay. Anything else, Cheryl?
You know, it is Live PC, Give PC this week on Friday, and I just hope that listeners will support KPCW, because all of us nonprofits really appreciate our time on your show, Leslie, or when we get to go on with Randy, and our venue for getting our message out. And it's such an exciting day, and it's going to be different this year because we can't all gather together. But I do hope that people will share the love and join the fun on Live PC, Give PC.
Thank you. Cheryl, talk to you next month. Thank you. Officials have suspended the search for a Park City resident who went missing in Idaho last month. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has more on that.
After a 10-day search, Blaine County Sheriff Search and Rescue suspended the search for Fern Baird after one last major operation on Friday. The 62-year-old signed into the Prairie Creek Trailhead north of Ketchum, Idaho at 1 p.m. Monday, October 19th. County Sheriff Search and Rescue members and the Sheriff's Office started to look for her the following Thursday after she was reported missing. In a press release from the Sheriff's Office, Blaine County Sheriff Steve Harkins said the department has exhausted their resources, but he said they'll continue to investigate any new leads. Baird was last seen in photographs wearing a gray jacket, black pants, and a black fanny pack. She is 5'5" and weighs 115 pounds. Baird is known in Park City as an active community member who has spent years volunteering at local organizations. Baird's family is offering a $25,000 reward for any information. If you have any information, you can call the Blaine County Sheriff's Office at 208-578-3371. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
Again, it is Election Day here in America, and KPCW will be bringing you live election results from Summit and Wasatch counties. We'll also be pulling the national coverage from National Public Radio starting tonight, 7 p.m. You can visit kpcw.org for the latest local results, plus all of the up-to-minute updates for both the statewide and national races from NPR. Election Night 2020 right here on KPCW. Tonight starting at 7 o'clock and online all night at kpcw.org.